AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to be with you today on a hot day. Cottonwood's coming down like it's its own blizzard out there.
Yeah, it is hot.
Oh, God. I just, that's the one that gets me is Cottonwood. It's the one allergy I get, and it just, ugh. So, but, you know, it's always so nice to get a reminder that we technically get snow twice a year here in Minnesota, winter and then when the cottonwood trees come down. In the same sense as I just had to rake up 1,000 pounds of helicopters off my silver maples. Because nothing I like more than raking twice a year, too, you know. A lot to get to today, but it's an absolute privilege to welcome to the show Senator John Marty, Senate District 66. He has been there. He's the iron horse of the Senate. This is 10 terms he has been in the Minnesota Senate. He's kind enough to take some time today to talk about the session that just was. Senator, thank you very much. I appreciate the time today, my friend.
Good to talk to you, Matt. And I do like the idea that the snow that's falling today is cottonwood and not cold stuff.
I do too. Claritin, I'll always have some stock price in that one for me there. So you have been there for so long. I have to ask about how things have changed for you because, I mean, really, the last few years when Doubt was running the House and just the way things had been going, we've had a lot of progress in the right direction, but we are dealing with a very different type of politics today than when you started in the Senate.
Right. It wasn't that politics were softball politics, and there was always hardball politics or always cheap shots, always this. The role of big money was big then, too, but not as big. It's gotten more nasty. In the past, I think there were times when you could take people from cross party lines and see them as opponents and people you disagree with, not the enemy. And it's becoming much more hostile that way and take no prisoners kind of thing, which I think is very disturbing. But other than that, I mean, hey, there have always been controversies, always been fights. There always will be. That's expected.
Yeah. And I always remember Jim Rhodes, the House rep that was down at St. Louis Park.
Right.
He was a Republican that was there before Steve Simon was the House rep there.
Right. And he was a fair guy. I mean, I think a lot of us worked with him a lot, and I continue to try and work across party lines. It just gets more difficult over the years.
Yeah, it definitely showed, and especially this new mentality, which initially I just thought maybe it was Kurt Dowd himself, and when Joyce Pepin was there, and just it was that crew. But the reality is when I saw Paul Gazelka and some of the Republicans' behavior this time around, I realized it's not just one individual politician. This is just how the Republicans do things. They kind of look at things as they're the enemy. Anything, any concession whatsoever is bad.
And therefore, you have to vote as a solid block without exception on every bill. And, I mean, they've been remarkably successful at that. I'm not sure it's a good thing, though. If our party takes a stand, we're going to all be for it, no matter whether it makes sense or not. And that's a real troubling thing because I think it's appropriate that people know what party people are of, but treating the party as it rules everything is not a healthy thing for democracy.
No, not at all. Let's talk. We've had a person say at the very beginning of session here and that you need to pay attention to the Senate File 1125, which was the Minnesota Health Plan, something you championed in the Senate. It, to my knowledge, it got tabled and never got out of conference.
Right. Never got a hearing at all this year. And that's disappointing because, you know, the Health and Human Services bill was a huge bill, and we try and do this to strengthen coverage for this group, and we fought off cuts in dental coverage and vision care for low-income people. But bottom line is we still have a very, very convoluted, very expensive healthcare system, and a lot of the fixes we do are temporary fixes. We insurance companies that provide health care right now that don't provide health care, that pay for some of the health care now, they spend a lot of time denying coverage to people, and we have to reinsure them now because they aren't making enough money in one part of their market. So state puts in public dollars to reinsure the insurance companies, which was their business. We wouldn't have any of that if we had a universal health care system like the Minnesota Health Plan. We would, you know, our Minnesota statutes, I don't know what it is, about 20 volumes long now. We would eliminate, I would care to bet we'd eliminate an entire statute book with the regulations for insurance companies and all the things we try to do to fix things. Even take the insulin debate this year, which has still not been resolved. Very frustrating to me because it's a deadly problem. It kills people when they can't afford their insulin. What we're doing is now, and I am strongly supporting it, we're trying to put in an emergency insulin access act for people who are struggling. They don't have the money. They need the insulin now to live, and they didn't get it. So we're creating a separate program for that. What we really need to do is fix the insulin ripoff price, where the pharmaceutical industry is selling drugs for 6-10 times what they were selling for originally. Same drug, they just up the price every year or two. And, you know, we got to fix the healthcare system, and Minnesota Health Plan would do that. It would negotiate prices with pharmaceutical industry. It would use the state to deliver healthcare in a smart, efficient way.
You know, when you step back from healthcare and you look at the countries that do have healthcare in their system, the few things that come out very quickly is one, it's far more cost efficient. People are healthier overall. Republicans and conservatives always try to put out scare tactics to try to scare people away. But the reality is, whenever presented with the option of getting rid of their system and going to an American type of system or keeping their system, they overwhelmingly, as countries, want to keep a single payer government system in place. It seems as if the only reason Republicans are against this, considering it is more cost efficient, you get a healthier populace overall, it's a win-win, is that in America, the healthcare companies, the medical device companies, the pharmaceutical companies, they look at the United States as their cash cow, the Christmas bonuses. And it seems like the only reason that this stuff doesn't get done is that they are basically, and I'll say this isn't me saying it, Republicans are getting paid with campaign donations and whatever to basically not get rid of the system in place because the profit margins for those companies is far more important than the health of its people.
Yeah, the pharmaceutical lobby, insurance lobby, they're very powerful and they're very generous to public officials and they win at the Capitol. Eliminating that, yeah, of course, people in other countries aren't begging to have ours. We pay twice as much,
yeah.
Not a little bit more. We pay twice as much and we have worse health outcomes. And so, yeah, my pitch is, hey, we want what they got. As a matter of fact, we want better than what they got. My argument is we could have better benefits that better coverage than those other countries have and do it for less than we're spending now, mm-hmm. which is there's a lot of slack in the system if you were spending twice as much. We could bring down our healthcare costs, cover everyone for all their medical needs. And I'm disappointed we didn't move forward on it, going to keep pushing with it. And there's growing political awareness. We're actually going to do some traveling around the state this year to hype the Minnesota Health Plan because mm-hmm. people, when they hear about it, physicians, the last time there was a survey done of physicians in Minnesota, it was 12 years ago. At that time, almost two-thirds of physicians said they think a single-payer system was the best way to deliver health care. We've got a lot of people, when they understand what we're talking about, it makes good sense to them.
Yeah.
It's intuitive, and it's better and healthier for them.
It's cost-effective, too. It is absolutely 100% cost-effective to do it this way.
Exactly.
When you look at the political lineup, because we are playing politics here, you mm-hmm. look at the political lineup, you do have enough urban senators who are Republican. This is an issue that I know is popular within the metro area. Have you heard from any of the Republican senators that are in the area that they might be willing to work with you on this bill? Or is this one of those things where they're just shutting it down? No, it's a no-go.
I think the biggest frustration, I hear some who, well, I kind of like this concept, but you know, it's government health care. We can't have government health care. And I'm saying, what do you mean it's government health care? Well, the government makes all the decisions. Well, under our bill, you know who makes medical decisions? You do. You and your medical provider. You and your doctor. Who chooses which doctors and hospitals you go to? You do. That's not true now. Your employer based on your plan, your health insurer based on your plan, or the government based on Medicaid and so on, they make the decisions for you. Under our plan, you make the decisions who you go to, and the decisions on what's covered and how it's covered are made by you and your physician, not by somebody else. So is this government run? No, it's patient and physician run. And to me, that's what a good healthcare system ought to be. So their opposition, the Republican opposition, isn't based on we don't like it or we like it. It's based on we're not supposed to be for something that sounds like government health care, so therefore we're opposed to it. And, of course, when you're getting the money from this, from the industry, that makes it easy to want to favor that. But let me make one thing you said. You said in the metro area, it tends to, you think it's probably pretty popular. I think it is. It's interesting. I think it's more popular in greater Minnesota. Why? Because people are having more trouble getting access to health care there.
Okay. Yeah.
And so I really, we don't have many DFLers in greater Minnesota anymore, and not many in the legislature, but in the public in greater Minnesota. I think one of the reasons Trump almost won was because they don't like Affordable Care Act. We know that. And they want something better than that. And Trump, basically, and Democrats were saying 4 years ago, were saying, hey, we love the Affordable Care Act. We're going to keep improving it. And Republicans were saying, let's throw it out and replace it with something else. That was a bogus promise and a hollow one because they had nothing to replace it with. But people are getting desperate when they're spending more for their insurance, their health insurance, and there for their home mortgage and scared with what they see coming in the future. And so I think that's one of the reasons Bernie Sanders did very well in lots of greater Minnesota and why Donald Trump ended up winning, not because they have anything in common other than people were desperately looking for a different health care system, one that actually covers them and that's affordable.
Well, and I think that the Affordable Care Act did a lot of good. I mean, it really did.
Absolutely did.
But it was poisoned by the way it was covered. Right. It was reported on.
And it didn't fix things. It covered a lot more people, which was very helpful. And I mean, it cut the number of uninsured in half. The trouble is, it doesn't bring down the cost. It doesn't do the other things. And the Republican solution is, well, let's throw that out and replace it with greed. I mean, nothing. They have no replacement for it. And to me, I would never want to throw something out until you have something better to replace it with. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think we should have. We should have bipartisan support for this. We should have a lot of businesses. And I think as businesses get to understand it, they come around to it. But that's a hard sell because a lot of them have never taken a look at it.
Well, and by the way, thanks for holding me accountable. You know what? As the DFL, we need to fight in every district. It is not just a metro area. And you're right. DFL, I think one of the reasons why they made we had a strong showing in 2018 was we went out into those districts and
absolutely.
We saw strong
DFL.
We
talked about things. Yeah.
Exactly.
I heard from one candidate in greater Minnesota district that DFLers probably think, oh, it's the one we can't win. And candidate was called up and wanted to talk about Minnesota health plan because he said, it sounds like the kind of thing people in my district would really love. And I said, I think they would, and I think it's worth talking about. And I think it's not something I'd say, oh, in a safe district you can talk about it. In a safe district, you don't have to worry about talking about it. Mm-hmm. What we need it for is people in the tough district saying, hey, we want to replace it. What's not to like about a healthcare system where you make the decisions, not some insurance company, where the choice you have is not whether you have a high deductible plan or a super high deductible plan, but the choice is whether which doctor you go to, which clinic you go to, and you make the choice. It's not a hard sell. We just have to stand up for what we believe and make it clear we want a doctor and patient run healthcare system.
The Republicans, you brought up the Emergency Insulin Act, the Alex Smith Act. The Republicans, I think, made a horrible misjudgment on this when they had the chance to add it to the special session bill. They voted in unison to not allow that to go on that bill. And ever since that vote went down, and they basically threatened the House saying if you add it, we won't pass the bill. Ever right. since that vote has happened, Senate Republicans have frantically tried to reframe the argument of why they did. The reality is, you just said it, there are loopholes in our system, and this is a prime example of people that make more than $17,000 a year that do not have health insurance and they can't afford insulin. We should have that stockpile there. Talk a little bit about that, because there sure does seem to be a lot of Republicans who are maybe even hoping hoping for another special session so they can go correct that mistake.
And I'll gladly have another special session to correct that mistake, because I think we've got to provide the emergency insulin. And it was interesting because a bill very similar to what Senator Melissa Wicklund from Bloomington, a DFLer, offered on that last night. We were trying to get everybody to agree to it because the Speaker of the House said she'd add it, and all three leaders, the Speaker, the Senate Majority Leader, and the Governor all had to approve it. So we went and got confirmation that the governor supported it, that the speaker supported it, but couldn't add it unless the Senate Majority Leader, Paul Gazelka, added it. And we asked him, and he decided not to, apparently, because they said no. But the thing I want to point out is that bill, very similar, a little more stripped down, but very similar to the amendment that was offered by a Republican to the same bill 3 weeks earlier, to the Omnibus Health and Human Services bill 3 weeks earlier. They offered it, I think, to claim political credit, and they voted for it, passed 65-0. So two people were absent, but everybody else voted for it. Everybody, with no exception. And then the thing that was offered the last night was very similar. It was filled in a few more numbers and so on, but I'm not hearing from people that that's what the difficulty was. I think there was some politics involved, but hey, you know, if we can pass in a special session, if Republicans can claim credit for helping do it, great. I want it to pass. That's what we need to get happening.
By the way, that's the first time I heard Senator Gazelka single-handedly kibosh the Emergency Insulin Act. That's a very interesting.
Well, that was just because they agreed there were no amendments could be allowed. The three leaders said they would accept no amendments unless all three of them would sign off on it. So I went and asked Senator Gazelka because he said, we'll talk to Senator Benson, and Senator Benson told me she was told the Speaker of the House wouldn't approve it, and so I went to the Speaker of the House and to the governor's office and said, look, I'm not asking if we can add it to the bill. I'm asking if we can get all three of you to add it to the bill. Are you one of those three, as one of those three who has to sign off? Will you sign off? Yes. So two of the three would sign off, so I went to Senator Gazelka, and he would think about it, and the answer was not the right one.
No, it wasn't. I want to ask you one final thing here, because you had a little frustration with the openness and the decision-making. Now, my perspective on this, dear God, I thought this was far more open and visible than what we've had, especially with Kurt Dowd, where he would run into a room with three or four people, come out and throw a bill at everyone and say, vote now, don't even read it. You know, the concept we had here, I do understand some of those final negotiations are in private, but I thought it was more open. But you feel as if the process was still closed.
Right. I feel that those private negotiations at the end should be open. And the biggest, and this is not a partisan issue, because I can guarantee you when Republicans are in control, it's behind closed door. When Democrats are behind closed door. And it's partly because people feel the arguments I hear is, well, there will be grandstanding if we do it in public. And, you know, they're right. Right now, what goes on in those rooms, the private negotiations, is real negotiations. And if you let the media in, people will grandstand and make statements for the press and the media and everyone. I agree. They will do that. So instead, what we do is we lock them out, and then they meet in private, and then they go out in the hall and make their grandstanding. And we don't know if they're telling the truth or not in their grandstanding then. And to me, it's something that people in power of every party, it's human nature, kind of, if I know something and you don't know it, I got some power that you don't have. And it's a natural thing. The DFL party, actually, when I say this is not a partisan issue, I'd say the negotiation stuff here being public is not partisan now, but it was in the 1970s, the early 70s. It was a Republican legislature, and DFLers got elected to office promising to open the doors to state government, and to their credit, they did so. Committee hearings in general were closed to the public before then. They passed the open meeting law, they passed requirements that legislative committees be open, and so on. And actually, even most conference committee negotiations were open to the public for a couple of years at least, and then they realized, well, the meetings have to be open, but we can just step away from the meetings and negotiate in private. And my argument is, if it's the public's business, it ought to be done in public. And to the argument that some people have said, honestly, they'll say this, they will say, you know, we can be more frank when we're having these discussions in private. And my response to that is, it's pretty off if you think about it, to say we can be more frank and in private, which means we'll be less frank when we're talking in front of the public. But we do not want our public officials to be less frank. So let's do it all in public, and then when what they say in private will be the same thing they're saying in public. And I think it's change that's much needed, like the getting rid of the garbage bills, which is continues to get worse under both parties. But to me, what the DFL did in the early 70s, promising open up government, they made incredible strides forward. It's been slipping slowly backwards since that time. It's time to reopen the doors to government. And my pitch is, hey, it doesn't have to be a partisan issue. I understand people who, when they're in the minority, this is terrible. They shut us out. And then when they're in the majority, they kind of are in power. Well, it's more easy for us to do this. And I'm not saying it'd be easy to negotiate in public. It's not so easy to negotiate in private. But it seems to me if it's important that we have our routine committees open to the public, it's important that we have the most important budget and policy negotiations in public as well at the end of session. And I've heard nobody, when they say, well, it's easier to do it, we can do a better job if we do it in private. I've heard nobody say we should go back to the 1960s and before, when routine committees were closed to the public. Why? Well, because it's a public business. We ought to do it in public. You'll get unanimous agreement from legislators on that, because we've gotten used to that over 40 years. We know it's the way we have to do it. If we made the law the same as we have for local governments, it has to be done in public. We would do it in public, and in a few years, we would say, of course, we got to do it that way.
If the Republicans complain about theatrics, I have never seen a larger group of drama queens and drama kings in this last session. They were getting ready for off-Broadway there. I really do like that point. And the honesty is that what it does prevent is that kind of mentality of I can speak, you know, like this in private versus in public. No, you just have to speak. And if you're against something, then you need to face the public and tell them you're against it.
Face the public and tell them. Because, again, the insulin bill in private, it was in the private negotiations. One, the House chair says one thing, the Senate chair says another thing, and we can never know. It's huge policy issues fall off to the side because of things like that. And so let's do it all in public. And if they can't face the public and vote against something, well, then they shouldn't vote against it.
Well, we do know for sure that Senator Gazelka shut it down, and then the Senate Republicans voted it down. So at the end of the day, that's where it died. It would die with the Senate Republicans. Senator John Marty, I can't tell you what a treat it is to chat with you. I could talk an entire hour with you. All my best this summer. Let us know where you're going around to talk about the Minnesota Health Plan, because we'd love to help you promote that a little bit as you get some good crowds out there and get that information out to the public.
I appreciate that, and keep in touch.
Thanks for
your good work.
Senator John Marty, District 66. Let's take a quick break. Come on back for a quick segment. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
What kind of a jackass would let an animal pick their insurance? Did you really think a lizard could save you money on car insurance? Would you let a duck pick your health policy? Insurance can be a zoo, but this is ridiculous. What you really need is an insurance agent that isn't looking out for the insurance companies. You need Cheryl at Array, an independent agent with 30 years experience looking for the best rate possible. Quit monkeying around and call 763-504-3067. That's 763-504-3067 for Cheryl at Array, representing you, not the insurance companies.
Burger Mo's gorgeous patio is open for the season. Enjoy nightly happy hours, more than 60 beers on tap, and the weather while you watch your favorite game on the outdoor screen. And don't miss live music Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. Offering 20 fresh, never frozen burger varieties, Burger Mo's also offers delicious appetizers, soups, salads, as well as unburgers, dogs, paninis, shakes, and desserts. Burger Mo's is located at 242 West 7th Street in St. Paul, with plenty of free parking, and online at burgermo's.com.
Food nourishes us. We need food to live. But how are we nourishing the food system? Well, actually, we're throwing a bunch of chemicals, and we're making the dirt dead, and then we're adding nitrates to the water, and we're causing dead zones in the ocean. Oh, and we're also causing climate change. We do that with every bite we eat. But we can create something different. We can switch to a regenerative system. And that's what we talk about every week on Food Freedom Radio. So tune to Food Freedom Radio Saturdays at 8 a.m. or anytime via podcast. Food Freedom Radio on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Pride Weekend is almost here, and there is something for everyone. From the Friday Night Beer Dabbler on the 21st, featuring 50 local brewers, to Pride in Concert on Saturday, June 22nd in Loring Park with the headliner TLC. And you can't forget about the Rainbow Run leading into the Ashley Rooks Pride Parade on Sunday, June 23rd. This is a festival and celebration you do not want to miss. Get your tickets now. VIP is still available with free food and drinks. Go to tcpride.org. That's tcpride.org. We'll see you there.
This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell.
Freddie, this generation of the baby boomers, people are living longer, so the baby boomers are taking care of elderly parents.
Let's talk about your health, and specifically, let's talk about Medicare. Our show features the concerns of America's 78 million baby boomers in employment, finance, health and nutrition, and even entertainment.
Catch New Beginnings with Freddie Bell, Saturdays at 11 on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Thank you to Senator John Marty for joining us. 10 terms in the Senate, man. He is an iron horse, absolutely. And you just hear why the guy is there. Absolutely. And I do want to make sure I follow up on one thing that he had mentioned, is the idea that the speaker might be up for a special session. This was our good friend Brianna Beerspach was talking about this. The Minnesota House wants lawmakers to return to St. Paul for a one-day special session in September to take up several bills that failed to pass and just completed special session. It comes down to this, is that the Republicans have realized they played the Emergency Insulin Act wrong. Now, once again, I think this is a no-brainer. But I'm a Democrat. I've got a heart. I care for other human beings, and that's just the reality of it. I don't look at money as my most important thing like Republicans do. And the Republicans, they didn't think this through. And now they are facing – the last thing Republicans want to do is go through the Christmas holidays and, you know, and basically have to be reminded every time they go anywhere, oh, you're the one that basically denied emergency insulin for people who are going to die. And so they have actually – the Republicans in the Senate have said maybe we should go back and try to get this thing – one thing passed. I give Melissa Hortman, the Speaker of the House, a lot of credit because she's sensing weakness. They know they desperately want to get that Insulin Act passed now, especially after every freaking explanation they try to make only makes them look worse. It does. So Hortman is realizing she has an opportunity here, and we'll have to see what happens. But the reality is that I think you might be able to see one or two other bills that the Democrats want. If the Republicans are desperate enough to get this Insulin Act back and replaced, they should have just added it when they had the chance. Now they're basically frantically trying to figure a way to get it back on without conceding too much. Maybe see if we can get another thing passed as well. Because once again, it was the Republicans that killed it at the end of the day. And by the way, thanks to Senator Marty, because he basically just said, oh, yeah, Paul Gazelka killed it. We had a chance to add it on. We talked to the governor. He was for it. We talked to Speaker Hortman. She was for it. We talked to Gazelka. He's like, yeah, I'd rather have insulin people die. I'd rather have diabetics die. Well, I mean, he didn't say it like that, but he kind of did say it like that. He kind of did. He didn't say it verbatim like that, but he kind of said it like that. Let's be honest with you. Gazelka, you suck, Shinebox Jr. Jeff is in Prior Lake. Let's get him in here before the break. Welcome on in, Jeff.
Oh, Matt, that was amazing. Fantastic spot. I agree with everything that he said, and I just want to speak to your audience. If we do nothing, we should expect nothing. If we can't pick up the phone, if we can't send an email, if that representative tells us where he's going to be, if he's got to come find us, then we're going to get nothing. If he tells us where he's going to be and we go find him, if we get involved, if we get engaged, we have an opportunity to make a change. But if we do nothing, we should expect nothing. Thank you.
And the problem, one of the things I think the problem is Republican voters, they get nothing and they think they've gotten something. That's the – not only do they get nothing, they get what they had taken away. And they think that this is – I've got more. No, you don't. You see that house that's not yours anymore? See that farm that's not yours anymore? See your health insurance, which is not yours anymore? Isn't this great? No, it's not. And he's absolutely correct. And I will say this. Senator Marty is correct. You take this bill, you go into every district in the state, and you hammer this home, because Republicans, they are terrified of health care. And there is zero leadership on health care from the federal level. There is zero. And so if you basically say, well, we're going to do it ourselves here in Minnesota, and you go out to rural Minnesota and you say, it's, you'll still be you and your doctor, you'll make all the choices. And when the Republicans say, well, it's big government's going to be doing it, it's like, nope, it's not. It's going to be the individual and the doctor. And by the way, currently corporate executives make all your health care choices for you. I want to stop that process. You know, that's a winning strategy. Take that DFL message. Go out into the rural parts of the state and let's win. My friends, 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950.
Hi, I'm Scott Peterson with the Minnesota News Network, inviting you to join us for Minnesota Matters, a weekly program covering everything that matters in the North Star State. This week, a legislative session wrap-up from the state capitol, Minnesota's Secretary of State on receiving much-needed election security funding, Mental Health Month in Minnesota, and a remarkable season for Golden Gopher softball. Tune us in right here or at minnesotanewsnetwork.com.
Sunday mornings at 6:30 on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Tom Hartman here, letting you know how you can go solar with All Energy Solar, even way up north in Minnesota. Lots of people ask them, isn't Minnesota too cloudy for solar? No. The truth? For one thing, Minneapolis gets nearly as much sun each year as Houston, Texas. But it isn't just about how much sun you get. It's also about having access to great local incentive programs that make solar affordable. Learn what your options are to save with solar and visit allenergysolar.com today.
The entire buying experience with Rudy Luther Toyota is so worthwhile. Every new Toyota comes with Toyota Care, 2 years of free maintenance with every new Toyota purchased. Their super staff is wonderful, always ready to help. And there's the Luther Advantage Card. With every new and used vehicle purchase, you'll get 3 years of 10 cents off per gallon of gas at holiday station stores, as well as discounted car washes. The Luther Advantage Card keeps you happy in your Rudy Luther vehicle. Head on over to Rudy Luther Toyota, 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
I'm Candy Broffel, publisher of the Twin Cities edition of Natural Awakenings magazine and host of Green Tea Conversations, a new show for people who are on a journey to take responsibility for their health and play a more active role in their family's well-being. Join me every Sunday at 10 a.m. as I interview local experts who share the latest in natural holistic approaches in a fun and informative way. So grab a cup of tea and join the conversation as we awaken to natural health. Visit us at naturaltwincities.com.
Tap, taste, and treasure at Vinaigrette, where we have some warm seasonal recipes all ready to create dynamite meals. Our fig balsamic vinegar pairs perfectly with roasted Brussels sprouts or baked brie. And sweet potatoes are always a winner, but never more than when they're roasted with a drizzle of vinaigrette cinnamon or orange-fused extra virgin olive oil on top. Come in today for more custom-crafted food and cocktail recipes at Vinaigrette, 50th and Xerxes in Minneapolis and 287 Water Street in downtown Excelsior. Online at vinaigrettemn.com.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, programming brought to you by eatlocalminnesota.com, restaurant of the week, Burger Mo's, delicious burgers. They've got the one with the fried egg on it. If you get it over easy, it's really messy, and gosh, is it tasty. Mm-hmm. they got great hot dogs, too. A lot of great variety there. Good menu. BurgerMo's.com, perfect. You gotta head over to St. Paul. Anything over at the X, anything over at the Minnesota History Museum, Science Museum, a great place to tag on a meal to go along with it. 242 West 7th Street in St. Paul, plenty of free parking. BurgerMo's.com, the eatlocalminnesota.com. Restaurant of the week. Let's get some business done, shall we, here, Hunter? The band Just Folk has got their fourth album out, Grounded. Now, if you don't know, Todd Collett has been a big supporter of AM 950. He lives in Spain, can't visit our businesses that sponsor us, so he basically sponsors the station directly. Now, you can, too. All you have to do is call us, 952-946-8885, 952-946-8885. Make it, you can talk to them about how you can sponsor the station, just like Todd has. We have, because of Todd, has sent us a bunch of these CDs. I've got a CD to give away right now. Very simple. If you would like to get a copy, just Folk Grounded, be caller number three. Caller number three at 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Caller number three, you will win the CD. And enjoy. We got CDs to give away all the rest of this week and next week as well. So once again, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Caller three, you will win. I wanted to... There are two things I want to bring up. And one of the things, as I'm going to do this as a precursor for a story I want to mention here, is people are not people are not born racist. They just are not. This is something they inherit from their parents via the parents teaching them that. I mean, there are times where I will say something and I will sound just like my dad, and I can say, that's whether you think that's been taught or whether you think that's genetic, that's interesting. But when it comes down to racism and bigotry, that's stuff that's being taught to you generally by your parents or by someone else who is acting as if a major influencer in that life. I say that because it's incredible that we still have kids today that are just that are being raised in our society that just seem to be just horrible. And there's a story out of Faribault. An 18-year-old Zachariah Manahan. He's not a teenager. He's a man. He's accused of a bias crime for allegedly spraying a Somali American teenager and her siblings with a garden hose while he yelled racial slurs. Zachariah Manahan of Faribault was charged Monday with felony stalking committed because of bias, as well as a misdemeanor charges of damaging property and disorderly conduct. The girl said Manahan sprayed water through an open second floor window of her family home. Police say a rug and a piece of furniture, as well as the walls, were drenched. I mean, that's some damage. I get it. It's Faribault. It's probably it's a community. My God, I dated a girl many years ago in Faribault, and back then I was driving out to the country to go see her. I mean, I was leaving the city. It's the city is encroaching in, and it is getting closer and closer to Faribault. As a matter of fact, I would say just north of Faribault, Northfield is probably technically part of the metro area now, and it's only moving further and further south, and the. You're not used to. I mean, I know that these people like to think that, that are living out in a traditionally white community. They think that they are you're kind of racially diverse. The reality is, when you see racial diversity walk through the door, you realize there's reactions like this. They realize they haven't been around a lot of race, and all of a sudden it's there. But at any point where this kid thought, and I say kid because I'm 50 and he's 18 and he's a punk. Innocent until proven guilty. I get it. But dear Lord, how do you get someone who is so broken at such a young age? How do you get someone that is I can't understand that. I just can't understand that. And, so he sees a Somali kid and what do you think you're doing? You think you're endearing yourself? What, you're just trying to make it miserable enough for this family to where they leave because you just don't want them there? You're going to go destroy their property? I mean, the good news is this kid's still in jail. To my knowledge, the report I saw earlier today, he's still in jail. He's not been released on bond. It's unfortunate. There was a story out, and I'll put this in conjunction. There was a story out, and I can't remember where this woman was from. She was just sentenced, and she was the one person that was caught on tape having her kids yell racial slurs at Muslims, and she was caught on tape, and she was sentenced, and I think it was like 3 years probation and stuff like this, and she has to go do on speaking tours and volunteer and write a letter of apology. And stuff like this. And to her credit, to this woman's credit, she came out and she actually said one of the most amazing things I actually heard from someone coming to this. She said, it's because I've been because I've been watching a news outlet, and she didn't specifically say which one, but I think we know which one it is, who has been teaching me to hate these people, and now I realize they've been lying to me, that I was wrong, that the news network was wrong, and this is all they've done is basically create hatred within me and my kids, and I will not forgive myself. And I was like, wow, that is a, you know, come to Jesus moment per se, where all of a sudden you realize the mistakes that you have made, that you were wrong and that you were believing in narrative. And I would love to be able to get that reaction from people without them being sentenced to jail or without them having to watch a kid they love have to go through cancer treatment or watching their farm get repossessed. I would love for a Republican to just sort of say, wow, that network has fed us a pool of lies. And my life is not getting better. I have been spent 40 years hating Democrats. And as a matter of fact, my life is markedly worse. I would just, why does it have to get to a point where there's a judge involved, there's a dead child involved, there's a foreclosed farm involved, for you guys to just stop and say, wow, those Republicans were lying to us the entire time. You know, it's... Last night, Fox News, Laura Ingraham, did you see, by the way, the image, Hunter? Did you see the image that it's a screen grab? I've got it up on my Twitter feed right now and also the Facebook page of Laura Ingraham. And this is with one of her chortle bros that's on with her. They're talking about politicians using kids as a prop. The backdrop behind them are the gravestones at Normandy.
Oh, geez. No, I haven't seen this. I'm pulling up your page right now. Oh, yeah. Here it is.
Oh, my God. There is a tone-deaf story. I mean, this could be the all-time Hall of Fame champion tone-deaf story of all time. Criticizing people using children as props as you sit in front of gravestones at Normandy on the day before D-Day, the 75th anniversary of D-Day.
It's really eerie looking.
And,
really,
and they're just chuckling it up about making fun of those Democrats for using babies as props. And here you're using dead World War II soldiers as a prop. You disgust me. But the reality is, as I look at that, and I'm a veteran, I mean, that's gut-wrenching. Can you imagine what the Republicans' reaction would be if Rachel Maddow was doing something like that? They would demand MSNBC to be taken off the air. But how many Republicans, now that I brought this up, say, well, I think it would be an honor if I had died on D-Day to have Laura Ingraham from Fox News in America using my gravestone. God, that would be great. No, it's not. It's disgusting. You should never use the military dead as a backdrop prop for you to mock the libs, because I can guarantee you there's a lot of people buried behind you who probably agree with liberals. Hate saying it. It is disturbing. It is disturbing. And I wish that we, I mean, this kid down in Faribault, Zachariah, I hope that he is spending his time in jail right now realizing, dear Lord, what am I doing with my life? I'm 18 years old. I'm now being charged with a hate crime. Dear Lord, I'm sorry. Let me throw me on the mercy of the court. Let me apologize to these people. Let me get my life in gear and go forward. My guess is going to be nope. My guess is going to be nope. And, you know, I wish we just could find some way, some magical spray that we could spray into these conservative faces that would be able to get them to change their mind without having to have catastrophic, life-altering disasters happen to them before they realize they were wrong. Gee willikers, can we only dream? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Come on back. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Oh, by the way, Brian and Otsego, congratulations. Brian and Otsego, you win the CD Grounded from Just Folk Enjoy. More CDs tomorrow. I look at you.
We use technology every day to help manage our lives. Why not use it to help manage your medications? St. Paul Corner Drug offers several free tools to keep you on track while taking your medications. Use our mobile app to quickly order a refill, or the MedsOnQ application, which turns your smartphone or tablet into your very own personal medication attendant. Email and text messaging options let you know when your medication is ready for pickup, making efficient use of your time. St. Paul Corner Drug, pharmacy the way it should be.
Seward Co-op, serving the community for nearly 45 years, invites you to shop their two convenient locations, both offering the strong commitment to local producers and healthy foods you've come to expect. Seward focuses on locally grown and raised products, fair trade, and environmental sustainability. Shop their selection of meats, artisan cheeses, and house-made baked goods. Find Seward at 2823 East Franklin Avenue or the Friendship Store on 38th Street and 3rd Avenue in Minneapolis. More at seward.coop.
Hey, this is your favorite producer, Eric. I'm here with Hunter, your other favorite producer. And we've got a new show on Saturdays at 7 p.m.
So tune in for Mission Accomplishers, the podcast-broadcast hybrid hosted by the fellas.
You'd be amazed at what we can accomplish. We'd love for you to check it out and subscribe on your favorite podcast app.
What missions have we accomplished?
We're working on it.
So tune in every Saturday at 7 p.m. for Mission Accomplishers and find out.
I put the program in place to protect the country.
I'm Rick Unger. You've heard the screamers. You've heard the shouters, the haters, the berators. Well, now it's time to listen to a real conversation, a rational conversation. Now it's time for the Rick Unger Show.
Listen to the Rick Unger Show every weekday from 5 to 7 p.m. on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Stream at am950radio.com or search KTNF on the TuneIn app.
Hi, I'm Dr. Scott Chambliot from Chambliot Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, get-you-out-of-pain-now dental office.
And I'm Rachel Chambliot. Did you know a lot of people are afraid of the dentist? You don't need to be afraid of my dad. He makes going to the dentist comfortable and even fun.
We don't care if you're a dental regular or haven't seen a dentist in years. We just want to make you comfortable and get you out of pain.
If you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth because they're the only ones you get. Call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH or visit fixmyteeth.us.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. How come is it we never see, when we build industry, when we let industry go into pristine nature areas, we never hear of stories later down the road of them saying, you know what, they want to make sure that they actually, you know, get more stricter, you know, regulations because they haven't been spilling pollutants into rivers or anything like that. So you know what? They want to basically make sure those rivers stay clean. It never goes that way. It's always the other way. Tribal officials and environmentalists are reacting with alarm. By the way, I want to make sure I correct something on this. Tribal officials and environmentalists makes it sound like this is only something that applies to very specific groups, Native American groups or the loony lefty enviros. I guarantee you there's a lot of people and probably a lot of conservatives who are in this area who have residences up there or cabins up in this area who are not as well eager to hear this story. They're reacting with alarm over a proposal to remove some water quality standards affecting the portion of the Dark River located northwest of Virginia, Minnesota. The proposal is part of a petition submitted last August 31st by U.S. Steel, which has for decades sought to fend off efforts by state and federal regulators to force the company to clean up pollution discharges from an 8,000-acre Minntac tailings basin. So once again, I want to remind people that these people are trying to be held to the standards that when these mines are will be clean, will be environmentally safe. You're not being environmentally safe. How dare you hold us to that standard? Yeah, how dare we? The discharges which enter both the Dark River and the Sandy River regularly exceed what limited water quality standards are currently imposed on the company, including for sulfates, specific conductants, and total dissolved solids. U.S. Steel's petition is highly technical in nature and seeks to change the official classification of a portion of the Dark River that supports wild and stock trout. Public waters in Minnesota are regulated based on their classifications, which reflect potential uses of those waters, such as drinking water, recreation, industrial, and agricultural irrigation. Those classes include Class 1, drinking water. Class 2, aquatic life, recreation and wildlife. Class 3, industrial. Class 4, agricultural. And Class 5, aesthetic enjoyment. It's pretty, but don't put your foot in that. Many public waters have multiple designated uses, and when taken together, those designations can impact the water quality standards, which the MPCA is required to enforce on those lakes and streams. U.S. Steel is seeking to drop 3 designated uses, including drinking water, industrial, and agriculture, for the trout stream portion of the Dark River, which begins about a mile and a half downstream from Dark Lake. According to the company, the changes make sense since the stretch of the river is unlikely to be used for industrial or agriculture and is not currently used in any significant means for drinking water. Okay, hold up a sec here. Not used in any significant means would imply to me that someone's using it for drinking water. And you are trying to change that. You know, you see old Elwin down there, Elwin Johnson, who lives downstream on the Dark River? He needs a third eye. You know what? He wants to, you know, who doesn't love a little liver disease? Come on, Matt. It is not currently used in any significant means for drinking water. What do you mean by that? It means to me that, oh yeah, some people use it, but, you know, we don't like those guys, so we're going to poison them. You know, that's what it kind of means to me. And used for industrial agriculture, I want to be careful with that agriculture thing because we have a lot of ducks. We have a lot of moose. We have some moose. We have a lot of deer. We have a lot of animals and fish that we eat and catch. And, you know, people go out for recreation and get those things. You know, I don't want my fish to come out of a sewage drainage. And you can sit there and say, well, it's not that bad. I mean, it makes them crunchy. I don't care. This trout stream segment of the Dark River extends 8 miles, located within the Superior National Forest, about 60 miles northeast of Chisholm. So, yeah, heaven forbid we regulate something in the Superior National Forest. The agency back in March issued a public call for public statements on U.S. Steel's proposal, which were due by the end of April. By the way, can I say this? How in the hell did this not get out earlier? Thanks to Timberjay up north for putting this story out. Other steps still lie ahead. The MPCA officials say they don't have a clear timeline at this point as when they might be ready to issue a decision on the U.S. Steel proposal. Yet MPCA officials say they've reviewed U.S. Steel's petition and agree that the information submitted supports the requested review of the designated uses. The MPCA's tentative plans. First of all, you didn't really put this out there. The story didn't come to light till now. And now you're basically, when you're at the point where it's like, hey, guess what? We really think that the U.S. Steel should be able to do this. Now we're finding out about this. Sounds a lot like when they have okayed the Viking Stadium the day after it was officially voted on. And then all of a sudden they're saying, well, should we spend all this money on the stadium? Yeah, right. Needless to say, they want to do more polluting. Can't we have some standards in this freaking state where we look at something like U.S. Steel or MinTac, or we look at any of these sulfur mines they want to build on the range, and they say, no, you want to do this, you need to do it right. Why is it that the sacrifice is always on the landowner, the individual, the Minnesotan that's got to drink, swim, and eat crap out of this toxic poison? Why? Give me a politician that will stand up for that, and I'll vote for them. Dear Lord. We're back tomorrow. Until then, see ya.